Welcome back to Community Connections. And of course, being the first Monday of the month, we've got our favourite private investigator, PI Pete. Welcome, Peter.
Yes, hello.
You're a bit soft. Can you move a little closer to the microphone, please, Peter?
Yep, is that a little better?
Yeah, that's a lot better.
Okay.
Peter, we sent you away because, you know, I've been telling you this quite a number of times, and I've actually got something we're going to send you away with this time at the end of the day to come back next week. A lot of people don't know what a private investigator. As I say, they're in the red flashy car. They've always got the blonde. They always win the girl in the end and all that. And we had a question last time, and I've got another one, much the same sort of thing. What's a typical day in the life of a private investigator?
Right. So a typical day would be you've either got something booked for the day, and typically for me that means I'm going to be out pretty early. So sparrows, as we might want to call it, but a lot of times I'm looking at or for people that are in the trades on the tools.
Yep.
And they tend to be on the road, you know, reasonably early, probably on the road by 6:15 a.m. So if I have something to do, I tend to be out quite early in the morning. And in that respect, what I need to achieve or perhaps rule something out is probably could be done by sort of 10 o'clock in the morning or something like that, which means I then come back to the office and work on other things. So, look, it's in general terms, I say to people, it's about a 50-50 split between the desktop office-based work and the field work, literally out in the field watching something, trying to connect something, waiting for something to happen, whatever the case might be. One of the beauties, or not always the beauty of one of these jobs, is obviously you never know what's coming up next. Pretty much the phone rings and you're off onto a tangent somewhere, or basically get in the car and get to somewhere that you need to get to. My primary corporate client, who I've been with for about 17 years now, basically our relationship is that if they want me anywhere in Melbourne within an hour, I pretty much guarantee to get there, and to be fair to both of us, I've very, very rarely let them down. So that's probably why the relationship's lasted for 17 years, I guess. So look, it's more the as I say, you really don't know what's coming up next. I don't, you know, I rarely have a full diary. I rarely know what's coming up tomorrow or next week. So it's the randomness that's sort of the good and bad of it is the randomness. And then obviously you can also be out at some shocking hours at night and evenings as well. So,
Peter, you were saying of a morning, like off with tradies and that. What are you trying to do there? Find someone that's working that shouldn't be working, or?
Yeah, it could be just trying to connect them with a job, or perhaps it's a family law dispute where they claim they don't have any income, so you've got to try and get them to a job site and, you know, keep repeating the process to say, well, mate, you've spent a week here at this job site. Surely you're not working for nothing. Where's your income? So things along those lines, and just putting things together as well, associating people and vehicles with addresses.
Yep.
That's one of the things that it's sort of the confirm and deny type situation.
Yep.
And it could be just a straight out, you know, surveillance to see how capable they are, as opposed to perhaps how capable they claim they're not.
Right. Peter, when you say that we'll just go back one stage, and you said to see if a person's been working and they shouldn't be working, and, you know, that they've been there 5 days and they claim they're only getting 1 day. With any of those, is it a case of do you then have to front the person, or do you just go back to your client and say to that client, well, I've observed them there 3 days this week, and then they go off and do it?
Yeah, look, I'm usually there to collate the information, and obviously my report, which would be my log,
yep,
which is generally supported by photos, perhaps a little bit of video. Video is getting a little bit cumbersome these days once we've gone to the digital age. So,
yep.
But look, generally photos, and, you know, it's very difficult for someone to argue with with what you present on paper, because, you know, that's kind of what you're licensed to do or what you're being tasked to do.
And the night stuff, I'm suspecting, is more where the husband's cheating on the wife?
Yeah, so it could be a little bit of that, or it could be a little bit of retail protection with things that can happen at night when the stores maybe might be closed, or, yep, you know, perhaps night shifts happening or things like that. So, yeah, so you can have some pretty terrible hours, but, you roll with the flow, and it's generally a my work, Alan, is generally a momentum thing. It's one of those strange things that once you sort of hit a bit of a purple patch, it just keeps going and going and going, and you think, oh, this will never end, and then 2 weeks later you're sitting there with nothing much to do. So you've got to go with the swings and roundabouts and be prepared to work hard when the opportunity's there.
Yeah. Peter, one question you're talking about after hours with retail. Do you ever get cases where a trusted employee goes in at nights or weekends when they shouldn't be there and take stuff, or you don't get involved with that at all?
Yeah, no, look, that's definitely something that could occur. It's about people who should or shouldn't be at the location, or, as you say, people, the key holders that might turn up. Obviously, with the digital and the camera surveillance these days, then that's probably less of a problem now because it's all pretty much logged anyway. But it could also be something as basic as, a security firm's being employed to do a certain number of runs during the night, and they may or may not actually undertake those runs. So that could be something that you might have a look at.
Just on that question, somebody told me, this is years ago, and I stress this isn't the normal thing that happens, but they had some patrolman that, you know, he had the group, and he was supposed to go in and check inside and all that sort of stuff, and he was supposed to check four times a night, I think, and they caught him. He pulled up the first time, put the four, and he was supposed to drop a different card every time he went, dropped the four cards and went away, and he never came back again. So do you get much of that?
Yeah, look, I think that's probably a little bit old hat these days, because I think a lot of the fobs and a lot of the keys actually log the entry and the exit, so you probably wouldn't get away with that these days, I wouldn't have thought. But, yeah, look, it's the kind of idea, and it sort of comes back again to the basic premise which I tell everyone. My job on the whole is to confirm or deny. Yep. So something either should be happening, or someone believes something's happening, then my job's to actually go out and see whether that is or isn't actually the case. Yeah.
All right. Just got to take a quick break, Pete. I've got a couple of questions that we want to come back to you on, but I'll just take these breaks. We'll be back with more.
No problem.
Thanks, Peter.
Goodbye, Norma Jean. Set you on the treadmill, and they made you change your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. And I would have liked to know you, but I was just burned out long before. Dower, Marilyn Monroe. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. And I would have liked to know you, but I was just a kid. The candle burned out long before the legend ever did. Candle burned out long before legend ever did.
And that, of course, was Elton John and Candle in the Wind. Now, we're talking to Peter. I should mention that Peter is from Absolute Facts. He's our private investigator. We have him the first Wednesday of every month. It's always great to talk to Peter. Peter, I've got two questions. Well, one of them's come in for a listener, so I'll take that first. You were talking about cars and, you know, confirming where they are and all that sort of stuff. We've had a question from a listener saying, do you get any special, service from people like Vic Roads, or do they just say to you, no, that's all privacy?
Yeah, absolutely not. So, and have to be very clear on that, because one of the frequent inquiries that might come into my office would be, can you check a vehicle registration? And the absolute answer is no.
Yep.
And I'm quite comfortable with and quite pleased that that is the case. We don't have any access at all. Perhaps many years ago that might have been something that would happen. You might have been able to have a contact at Vic Roads, or perhaps a friendly police officer might check something on the computer. But these days that leaves what they call a footprint.
Yep.
And that can lead to basically them losing their jobs.
Yeah, so. I know the police one. I thought, or the listener thought that maybe because you were a private detective, you could show them your qualifications, and in fact you would be given something by Vic Roads, but obviously not.
No, the only way you can actually do that is to have an authority from the actual person that owns the vehicle, and clearly if you're doing an investigation, you're not going to get an authority. But it's an interesting topic, actually, because we're just hearing now that Vic Roads is going to be semi-privatised,
yeah.
Or the licensing and registration aspect of it's going to be privatised, or potentially privatised. And in my mind, I see Vic Roads as quite a secure government organisation, or at least you'd like to think so.
Yep.
So, I mean, that certainly pricked my curiosity when they're talking about privatising licensing and registration, but more the information that's contained in the privacy. I think there's definitely some privacy concerns there.
Yeah, we probably need to talk to that as it becomes a bit clearer what's going to happen. Peter, the other question that I just want to ask you, pardon me, you were talking about taking cameras and videos and all that just earlier on this afternoon, earlier on in the show. What's your view on people? I don't want to use the names of these big ones, but it's been in the news a bit lately where they've got these... you're nodding your head as though, so I don't want to go here. They've got the cameras in the stores. Now, personally, I don't care, because I got nothing to hide, so I don't care. And if they want to take my photo or whatever they do. But do you have a view on that yourself as a private investigator?
My personal view is exactly the same as yours. If you're not doing anything untoward, then why would you care? I would suspect that the people that are making the most fuss are potentially the people that have got the most to hide.
Yep.
And I absolutely agree. It's the same conversation we just had about Vic Roads. You'd want to have guarantees that your privacy is being protected at all times, and that I think the issue that was coming up was that potentially there's a massive database of pictures, but also traces of where you've been or not been.
Yep.
At certain times, and I think that's a genuine concern, that you would be concerned that information should not be misused at any stage.
Yep.
However, my experience is probably the flip side of the same coin, is that it is potentially very helpful to have this kind of technology, and it's also very helpful to establish and confirm something that might otherwise be denied, or otherwise, you know, say, no, that wasn't me because the picture is a little bit pixelated or a little bit grainy, for argument's sake. So I think from an evidence gathering point of view, it's certainly, to me, it would appear as if it's a very good tool. But again, yes, I understand the other side where people are saying, well, what about my privacy? What about logging where I've been and what I've done? I would have thought my response to that is, it's the pure volume. Why would people be bothered, given the pure volume, to single out Alan Collier and say that he was at a certain location at a certain time? I mean, I think people have to understand that to be able to do something like that would take an enormous amount of sifting. And I just don't think that's something that you need to worry about if you're not doing anything untoward.
Peter, should there be a sign up at the shops when you walk in saying that this could possibly happen?
I believe there are. I think that was one of the defences, that there is could be in minute
right. I've never seen the sign yet, but that doesn't mean anything.
My understanding is that there is signage there. Perhaps they could be a little bit bigger, which, of course, from a retail perspective, you possibly don't really want to put up a great big glaring sign saying you're being photographed or filmed or whatever. So I can see both sides of the argument. I think the signage perhaps possibly is left a little bit to be desired, yes.
Peter, we'll say you're working for a big company, and I know you do work for some big ones, and we don't want to know about them because I don't want to embarrass anyone. If the company or one or two of the companies that you were working for had that, would you be expecting, as the private investigator, to be allowed to look at that?
I might have to let that one go through to the keeper, to be quite honest with you.
That's all right. That's all right.
Yeah.
We don't want to put you... Look, we'll take a quick break because I've got to take another one, and we'll come back with more. And we'll be with Peter from Absolute Facts. You that on Sunday we've got plenty of the old rock and roll stuff coming up. I'll be here between 12 and 3 with music, memories and more, hits of the 50s, 60s, the 1 o'clock funnies, a boy and his music, and we'll have a great time. And I'll still be filling in for Matt on Sunday night between 6 and 8 with a rock and roll hit parade. So there's 5 hours of good rock and roll on this Sunday afternoon. So I'd love to have you along with me. But we're talking to Peter at Absolute Facts. Peter, the financial year is just departed. It's probably a little bit early to ask you this, but have you got any idea, or let's ask for your gut feeling, whether you think it's going to, you call it retail shrinkage, I call it knocking off. Do you think it'll be up in the last 12 months? Or the reason why I ask, and I'll just put this in first, we've got rising petrol, we've got rising interest rates. When you get those sorts of storms, do you get people who steal because they can't afford what they need, or does it, that's not why they steal, they only steal because they want the thrill of stealing?
I think the statistics will show that, and probably increasingly show that out of desperation that there'll be an increase in at least in theft, retail theft or attempted retail theft, possibly be a little bit less sophisticated than the more organised retail theft that does go on. That'll probably continue, if not increase. I think with interest rates, I think interest rates are clearly going to keep going up. And I mean, the Reserve Bank governor's actually said so anyway. I think the 0.5 the other day was probably 0.25 under what it should have been.
Yep.
The states went up by 0.75. We only went up by 0.5. So I think there's a clue there as to where we're headed over the next few months. And that's going to bite a lot of people, obviously mortgage payments and everything else. So, and happy new financial year to you, Alan. It was an opportunity for someone in small business like myself to look back and say, well, how did the actual 12 months work out? And with a little bit of JobKeeper thrown in, it was an acceptable turnover for the financial year, given the absolute roller coaster ride that myself and so many people in small business in particular went on for basically for the last 3 years, yes, really, but for the last 12 months, yeah.
Peter, can I just ask you, and if you can't answer this now, maybe if you could take it on board for homework, out of your retail shrinkage, what percentage do you reckon is by gangs or people that steal because to make money, whether it be in a gang or whether it just be me knocking off stuff to go and flog it down the local market, as opposed to the one that you've just talked about, people knocking it off because they just can't afford to do it. Would you have any idea, or do you want to take that away and look at it for next month?
No, I think we touched on some of these stats last time when we pointed out that the frequency's probably not necessarily increased, but the value of what's been taken has actually increased. And I would say to you that an organised gang, as you call it, will do more harm to any retailer than the odds and sods that might, you know, not pay for something or perhaps not scan something or whatever. It's the people that are making consistent money day in, day out by stealing or not paying for products. They're the ones that will do you more harm.
And when you say more harm, Peter, what do you mean? You're talking financial harm?
It's a bigger loss. They're in bigger losses.
Yep.
Yeah, because they're doing it day in, day out. So they're the ones, I would say to you, from a corporate retail profit protection perspective, they would be the people you're trying to target because they're the ones doing you the most damage from your bottom line.
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing too, that once you... if you can get hold of them and get them arrested and all that, it's going to take a lot more dollars out rather than the one man or the one lady who just happens to pinch something because they're hungry or something like that.
Yeah, look, from evidence suggests that it's quite a tiered process, and obviously the higher up the ladder you can get and get them out of circulation, that's probably to your benefit.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want the person who's actually committing the actual crime. It's the people that are putting them up to it or taking the product, the goods or certain product and profiting from it. That, you know, the people that actually do it, from my understanding, are probably paid a pittance compared with what the actual end return is.
Peter, I don't know whether you've had much to do with these gangs at all. I'm wondering, is there like a Fagan thing to it where some of these, I know that they're saying with, I think, well, no, I better not go down that track. I don't want to get myself into trouble. But that maybe they're using younger people because they know that the if they get caught, they'll either get a slap on the wrist or they'll go through the children's court. Are many of the gangs doing that, do you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was referring to when I said a pittance. So basically there's a structured system,
yep.
A hierarchy, if you like, and that the people actually perpetuating the crime do tend to be deliberately under the age of 18 or 16 or whatever it might be, so they're juveniles. So again, you know, from a apprehension point of view and a processing point of view, it's almost pointless. So that therein lies the problem.
And then the hierarchy make all the money.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So the person perpetuating the actual crime, committing the actual offence, is not really getting paid, is only getting paid a small portion of what is actually gained from selling the item, even if it is at half price or something. There's still a profit to be had.
Peter, have you ever done any work on, we talk about asset protection, I think that's what you're calling it, as to where those goods go or once the person's caught or whatever, is that where you bail out? Do you ever find out where some of this stuff goes?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, if we can follow the trail through. So I call it profit protection. So, yeah, if you're lucky enough to be able to follow it to the next port of call, that can be quite helpful. So there's a few obvious ones that come to mind and obviously a few obvious online portals that might be used to offload this stuff. And there's also, of course, the dark web, which nobody wants to talk about, where we're told that a lot of these transactions are taking place.
Peter, I read a while ago where somebody had, I think it was Mercedes-Benz, knocked off, and they couldn't find it. The police didn't find it or anything. And some guy happened to, I don't know how we got on it, but he found it saw a photo of it in a container in Dubai. I mean, cars are big things. Do you reckon much of the stuff that gets knocked off over here winds up in containers being sold overseas?
Yeah, absolutely, and even in parts. So even broken down into parts, and that goes for heavy equipment as well, heavy machinery like bulldozers and backhoes and even the smaller things like skid steers and things like that. Trailers that go on the back of semis, yeah. So they can disappear as well. So very occasionally the police will announce that they've raided a property, usually out in rural Victoria somewhere, where they've found, you know, 300 items of interest, the vehicles or backhoes or whatever that they've been recovered. So
is it mainly though the big equipment that gets sent overseas? Like, you wouldn't go in and knock off a whole lot of stuff from around a whole lot of retail stores and put them in a container and send them overseas?
No, my understanding is it would be more vehicles or I was just adding the heavy equipment because that's something that people don't necessarily think of, but absolutely, European cars in particular, and German, you know, high-value cars most definitely can travel overseas and be rebirthed.
Yeah. Unreal. Peter, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Oh,
And you're listening to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. I can't believe how quick it goes. Well, we've got Peter in from Absolute Facts. It's 13 minutes until 2. And we've hit the top for the day, 16 degrees. So whippee! But it's going to go down to a chilly 1 degree tonight. Peter, you would like to just mention the road toll. The road toll's not coming down at all, is it?
No, we brought this up a month or two ago, I think, and I just looked up the current number. We're sitting at 129 lives lost in Victoria, and Victoria Police are obviously extremely concerned about that. And I just noticed, too, the stat in respect to the male-female split, it's staying at about three times as many males than females that are dying on the roads. So
probably the young bucks, I think, they can do no wrong.
Yeah, I knew you'd ask me a curly one. I haven't seen a breakup of age, but the trend seems to be staying about the same, that it's approximately three times as many males than females. Yeah.
Do you reckon that that's what it is, Peter, that the bravados are the younger guys, or...?
No, I think there's probably more factors to that. I think the post-COVID, we've talked about this, about the perhaps the driving, a bit rusty yep. on with the driving habits, yep. and I think people in general are probably just getting a bit more... seem to be getting a bit more impatient out there on the road, so...
They seem to be, don't they?
Yeah, it just seems to be.
Peter, I'll ask you the question next for you to bring back next time. We asked you last time, because our audience is really, really wants to know more about a private investigator, and there's no doubt about that. And I told you from day one that I thought all our Mr. and Mrs. Lay are very... we don't work in that field. We don't know much about private investigators, but someone's rung us, and it ties in probably very much to what you did this month. But if you could just have a look and give it a bit of thought about what you find as the highs of your job and the lows.
Now, I
know you're not going to tell us about particular cases, and we're not asking that, but I suspect that maybe the low is that, you know, you have a very nice lady who you think should have a perfect life, and you find out the husband's cheating. But I don't know, and that's why this person would like to know what the highs are and what the lows are.
Yep, sure, I can. I'll do some homework on it. I have some immediate responses, but I'll pad that out a little bit for next month.
Well, also, Peter, it's a case of one of those things that what jumps to your mind right now when you start to think about it, you might find, oh, no, there's been worse or there's been better than what I've just thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, again, it's, obviously at the end of the day, my job is going back to the confirm and deny again. My job is to get the answer. So the answer can sometimes be unfortunate, but at least my client has the answer, and they can then make, you know, sort of semi-informed decisions given the information that's been provided.
Well, I guess that's one of the things too, and we don't want to just dwell on matrimonial issues, but I guess, you know, if a person's got the... I know you said you mainly like to work for the ladies, so if the lady's got the information and still decides to hang around, well, I mean, you've done your job, haven't you? You haven't told to her, you've got to leave this husband, he's a deadbeat. It's up to them, isn't it?
And yet, surprisingly enough, I get a lot of repeat business. So I think I've had one frequent flyer, I think, four times around over about 20-year journey. That we've been through the same process, I think, on four occasions.
Always with the same... fellow involved?
Yes, the leopard doesn't change its spot, Alan, which is something I say to most of my female clients when we wrap up the first occasion.
Yep.
And when they ring me back a year or two later, they quote that back to me and say, you were right, the leopard doesn't change its spots.
I don't want to know about the case because that's what we're here to do, but she must be a pretty forgiving lady to have either fallen for the same line of rubbish or... been so forgiving that she's forgiven three times and he's still done it a fourth time.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of elements to that that I've seen over my journey. Is one is that there's kind of that loneliness aspect, that sort of better to be with someone than not to be anyone, be on your own. That could be an element. Kids could also be a bit of an element. So whilst the kids are till they get to a certain age. There's a bit of sacrifice there, maybe for the sake of the children. And the other thing I've found is from when speaking to these people is men seem to be fairly good at ingratiating themselves back into the relationship. So
are they?
Could be another factor as well.
There must be some fairly forgiving ladies, because I would have thought that if I was a lady and the guy did it once, I'd be saying, like, on your bike, I don't want to see you ever again. But I suppose that's easy for a guy in some ways. I mean, the guy's often the one with the job, and so all of a sudden it's not going to come crashing down with them. But I guess if you're a lady and a couple of kids and you're not working, it's a pretty daunting thing to all of a sudden find themselves with no income, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the whole financial power and financial abuse and some other very unfortunate personality traits, the controlling traits and things like that. So yeah, you can get into some very deep territory, unfortunately.
Yeah, and of course the worst one too is that where they get threatened. You know, if you leave me, then I'll take the kids and you'll never see the kids again, all that, which is a load of rot. But we actually did something in the Legal Hour, I think, last month on intervention orders, and there are some scumbags of women around, but there's some scumbags of guys around too, aren't there?
Yeah, it's a tough one, the intervention stuff. And I noticed the Victoria Police are doing undertaking a bit of a re-education program to have a number of officers. I think it might have been 100 or so that actually had specific training to sort of look a bit more closely at perhaps the warning signs.
Yep.
So that they might, police might intervene a little quicker. Yep. Very, very tough one though, but,
well,
you know.
I mean, I said this on air last time, that when I was growing up, my father, and he was a well-respected person, so, but if he saw a husband and wife having a bit of a bang on down the street, he'd always say, oh, look, that's none of our business, just keep walking. And that seemed to be the attitude, and in some ways the attitude of the police, you know, 40, 50 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you could probably say that, and I don't know whether that's changed too much, to be quite honest with you, Alan. I think if people were having a physical altercation on the street or at the shops or something, I'm not sure how many people would get involved either at the moment.
Well, the trouble is now, which is added to another escalation, is the fact that you don't know who's carrying a knife or who's carrying a gun, and some of them use them.
Yeah, look, I think just on reflection, having said what I just said, I think people are probably be more likely to record it on their phone, which may or may not prove useful down the track, rather than actually intervene physically intervene. I think people are probably more inclined to take a bit of a video clip, which, as I said, could be useful down the track. So
we hope so. Peter, unfortunately, we've got to go. It's been terrific having you with us yet again, and we'll see you back. And it'll be August then, won't it?
Yes, it'll be early August, the first Wednesday in August.
Gee, I can't believe how quick the year's going, Peter.
Yeah, it'll be Christmas soon.
Peter, just one quick question. Does the weather play any part in profit protection? Like, do you find that there's more stuff knocked off during the winter? I'm probably talking not so much with the gangs, but with other people, or is that nothing?
Oh, I suppose you could argue that the better weather might bring people out, but I was going to go on another quick tangent there, that I actually had a job where I was trying to get some videos, some ID pics, and I couldn't because the weather's been so bad, my car had fogged up and it was raining and you can't really sit there with the windscreen wipers on. So I had to abort for about a week because I just couldn't get the opportunity.
Just couldn't get it? I actually, the reason why I asked that, I thought maybe people would be knocking off coats and things the likes of that in winter, that it might have actually put the amount of money up that went off in winter as opposed to summer.
Oh, definitely. There's a seasonal element to it. So heaters, obviously, over the last month or two have been one of the things that might get knocked off. And I suppose with a day like today, it could be outdoor furniture. So,
Peter, I've got to go. Thanks for having us. And I'll look forward to seeing you in a month's time.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for your time.
No worries. Thanks, Peter. Bye.